It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Hello, everybody. I'm Jesse Waters, along with Judge Jeanine Pirro, Geraldo Rivera, Martha McCallum, and Greg Gutfeld. It's 5 o'clock in New York City, and this is The Five.
Evil swept across Uvalde yesterday. Anyone who shoots his grandmother in the face has to have evil in his heart. But it is far more evil for someone to gun down little kids. It is intolerable.
Fox News alert, we're getting brand new details on the heartbreaking tragedy in Texas. At least 19 children and 2 adults are dead at Robb Elementary School near San Antonio. Police giving more insight into how this terrible event unfolded. Jeff Paul is on the ground with the latest. Jeff.
Yeah, Jesse, we're starting to learn more not only about the shooting, but also about the suspect. According to Texas Governor Greg Abbott, he says about 30 minutes before the shooting, the suspect sent some messages on social media. Now, in one of them, he apparently wrote that he was going to shoot his grandmother. In another, he wrote that he did, in fact, shoot his grandmother. And then in a third, he wrote he was going to go shoot up a nearby elementary school. Investigators confirmed after shooting his grandmother, the suspect then drove off, crashing his truck near Robb Elementary School. From there, officials say he barricaded himself inside a fourth grade classroom. This is where all 21 people died, 19 students and 2 teachers. Now, law enforcement then forced their way in, eventually killing the suspect. Governor Greg Abbott made a point to credit officers who responded without hesitation.
The reason it was not worse is because law enforcement officials did what they do. They showed amazing courage by running toward gunfire for the singular purpose of trying to save lives.
Now, shortly after making that statement, that news conference was then interrupted by Texas Democratic gubernatorial candidate Beto O'Rourke. Before he was removed by police officers, he told the governor that he was doing nothing and that this was totally predictable. Jesse?
Jeff, thanks a lot. All right, Greg, you've had some time to think about what's happened. Want to share that with us?
Well, I mean, you know, this is terrorism, and like terrorism, you find a way to prevent an attack after it occurs, right? That's when you see the variable that you missed. If you hadn't missed the variable, then the attack would have been prevented, so you don't hear about it. So you don't see our blind spots, really, until the consequences occur from those blind spots. And I think we all are always looking for one variable to explain things. For some, it's racism. Others, it's lawlessness or gun control. But I was looking at the last 4 mass shootings, and it's Hispanic male, white male, black male, Asian male. All males, obvious. But the one trait that doesn't matter is obviously race. But there was one strand beyond maleness, and that is mental illness. And it may be the number one problem in America. This is not a defense of the killing. I'm just trying to, I look outside our streets, the killer, and you see so many broken people who aren't treated. And then in rural and suburban settings, they may just be tucked away. And the pandemic makes it worse through isolation. So we have like a collection of aimless, disturbed, mentally ill males. And this, in this case, the reason why he wasn't prevented is age. I mean, we've kind of like been able to, like, our mass killers are getting younger and younger and younger because they don't have a history. And it's like the inverse of workplace violence. That's decreased dramatically because we're the ability to see a history of violence in older males. And then there's more security. But in this case, they get younger because those are the ones that can get away with it because they had no history. He was able to buy a gun because he had no criminal history. And the only time he posted on stuff was 30 minutes before. That's not enough time to act. I mean, they tried, but.
That is interesting. The male component, being able to purchase the weapon because your slate is clean, and missed warning signs throughout the community, throughout the family, and throughout the school, Martha.
Yeah, you know, I think Greg makes a great point about the variance in all of the people that we've seen and then the things that they have in common, which is this mental health issue, right? And I think back to, I know all of us, when we started to learn what had happened here yesterday, you just go right back to Sandy Hook because it's such a, it has a lot of similarities, right? You have this young man, and I think about in Adam Lanza's case, we later learned that there had been efforts to commit him.
Yeah.
That he was afraid that his mother was going to do that to him, right? And one of the things that has totally broken down in society is that option, okay? The option of relying on an institution, a hospital, where someone who is not able to function in society mm-hmm. can go for treatment. And what happened is, you know, decades ago, we decided that these places were not operating well, right? And some of them weren't. Some of them were absolutely horrific. But the thing is that we decided to mainstream everybody, right, and medicate everybody. So now you've got this overabundance of people who live out in the public who maybe can't really function that way. It's interesting to me. I went on the website for the high school, and one of the things that we learned is that he wasn't going to graduate. And this is devastating for someone his age. He worked at a Wendy's where they started to notice that his behavior wasn't right. COVID kept him home. He dropped out during COVID. This is another nexus that is really important, I think, in this story in terms of the isolation that was happening at this point. We don't know about his parents. There's some reports that his mother had problems with drugs. But graduation is this Friday night at that high school, right? And there's pictures on the website of all the kids that are graduating. And I heard another reporter this morning say that they have pictures all up and down the street in town, because they're proud of these kids that are graduating, right? Mm-hmm. And this impact, you know, these are not excuses. These are just sort of what we look at as the data points and the things that perhaps somebody could have picked up on. And I know we're going to talk about this in the next block, but we got to talk about the school security issue because there's a lot of questions. They were doing a lot in that regard that didn't seem to be working.
No, it didn't. Jeff brought it up at the top. Beto O'Rourke crashed this press conference. Let's play a little bit of that.
He needs to get his ass out of here. This isn't the place to talk this over.
This is totally predictable. When you,
sir, you're out of line. Sir, you are out of line. Sir, you are out of line. Please leave this auditorium. I can't believe you're a sick son of a to come to a deal like this to make a political issue.
So the person who called him a sick son of a, that was the mayor of the town this happened at, Janine.
Well, it's Texas. And that was about as inappropriate at a time when the governor was recognizing the pain, the grief, the healing that they're trying to begin, the fact that they have been traumatized and will remain traumatized, that small town, for decades, especially the children in the school. And for him to come and make a political statement is such a cheap political shot. And I believe he should have been shot down for that. This is not the time for politics. Today is the time to recognize the horror that has been imposed upon this town and these families and these victims. And it's a time to think about what we can do so that no other child has to suffer this kind of disaster or trauma again. But, you know, when we talk about mental illness, one of the things that concerns me is this, it's just this kind of amorphous right. blob, mental illness. The Buffalo shooter taught us that when someone seems incapable of functioning in our society, we send them for a 730, which is what I used to do when I was a judge. If I thought someone was a danger to himself or a danger to others, I would send them for a psychiatric review. Now they're doing the psychiatric review. They're letting them out. The guy in Buffalo goes out and kills 10 people, or the guy who traveled to Buffalo, I should say. And, you know, a lot of these people are not necessarily mentally insane. This is not insanity. Mm-hmm. Insanity is when you don't know where you are. You're in a totally in a state where you can't tell time or relevance or what's going on. This guy's predicting what he's going to do. He's saying, I just did it. Now I'm going to go do this. So the question for us today is how we can come together and heal the pain for everyone. I don't care if you're progressive or you're a right-wing person. I don't care what you are. We all bleed. I'm a mother and a grandmother, and I bleed for this kind of, grieve for this kind of trauma. I don't, we all imagine it happening to our loved ones. So one of the things we have to do is we have to make sure that we start prosecuting crime. And I'm not going to be political here. I want to prosecute crimes. I want to prosecute gun crimes. I want to know, and we'll talk about this in the next block, the crumbs. There were some crumbs. We know that he's from a broken home. We know that he's a loner. We know that he was self-injuring himself. We know that he was made fun of because he has a lisp and because apparently he wore eyeliner. We know that there was violent rhetoric from people he worked with and that he was isolated. I mean, you know, but does that mean we can go out and arrest him? No. So let's not just throw it out at mental health. Let's try to harden the facilities, which we'll talk about in the next block.
Geraldo, the judge makes a really important point. Say you send someone to a psych ward. And they're not insane. They're evil. They're a sociopath. How do you address that?
I don't know. I think that we have to come to grips with the fact that there is mental illness in every country on Earth. But these mass homicides, with rare exceptions, are an American phenomenon. Every country has crazy people. Why is it here that they result in such slaughter? But I just want to say a different thing. I want to go in a different direction because I am sorry and ashamed that we haven't done more to protect these children. And I was listening to Jeff Paul's, our correspondent's report just then. And he talked about how all of the fatalities were from that one classroom. So there's 19 children and two teachers. So regardless of the kind of weapon you have, you know, it takes time. You got to shoot. So imagine the terror that these children in that room are feeling when this animal is now killing them. He's barricaded himself in their classroom. Now he's killing them. And he kills Johnny, and he kills Sarah, and he kills Mikey, and this and that. I cannot fathom the terror that these children endured. I mean, for that, all of us, there's no ideology, there's no difference left, right. We all, parents, grandparents, no children, we feel, how is the human being capable of that kind of despicable, heartless? It is
beyond. It's beyond description and very emotional for everybody involved. Up next, in the wake of the horrifying shooting in Texas, a new push to harden schools to protect our children.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
New calls to harden soft targets in the wake of the elementary school massacre in Uvalde, Texas. The state's attorney general is calling for stronger police presence.
Look, we just spent $40 billion on the Ukraine to help protect another nation. It seems like the least we could do is fund a police officer or at least a program, because obviously there are thousands and thousands of schools in this country, a program that trains people in the school so that when this does happen, because it will happen again, we know it's going to happen. So if we know it's going to happen, let's do everything we can to prevent it from turning into the situation we just had yesterday.
And Daryl Scott, whose daughter Rachel died in the Columbine shooting, says the key to preventing more tragic shootings is by reaching out to young people.
There's two sides to the coin when it comes to prevention. Most of the focus that we have is on hardening the target, making it more difficult for people to get into the school, et cetera. And that's a necessary part. But the other side of the coin is softening the heart. There's hardening the target, but there's softening the heart. And our whole mission is to soften the hearts of young people.
You know, Greg, every security professional knows that there will be a 100% chance of another school shooting. Mm. So this particular school had a number of security measures in place. What else can we do to harden these soft targets?
Again, you go back to what I said before, is that you don't see what was missed until after it happens. I think that hardening soft targets should be like a college major. Like, it's an incredible, I mean, when you think about terror, future threats, which are going to come with drones and bioterror school shootings, this could be a highly lucrative industry. I think history hasn't prepared us for this. We always assume that violence is army versus army, when in fact what can happen could be the sole responsibility of one person. And every place where people congregate can be a target. And the goal is not to prevent an attack entirely. It's to get the attacker to pass you by. And there are a lot of ways to do that. In fact, I mean, just what you see with airports and in some cases miles away, they will push the perimeter out. The perimeter shouldn't begin at the school door. Right? Because, I mean, that's only one place you got to get through. But if you look at airports, you can get stopped, you know, 200, 300 yards before you get there. They have the perimeters, and outside the perimeter, you're always vulnerable. Mm-hmm. But the key is, why make it vulnerable right at the school? I think they're going to have to start thinking about pushing it out, you know, and then creating certain kinds of other things. You know, just by parking a cop car out in front of schools is right. enough to make somebody drive by. Mm-hmm. I think that was the case in the Joker. What's this? You know, the dude in Colorado, the Colorado shooter.
Aurora.
Yeah, Aurora.
You know what's interesting about it, though, is, and we were talking about this during the break, there seems to be this uncanny similarity between Adam Lanza and Sandy Hook. And not Sandy Hook, Adam Lanza. Sandy Hook and then this kid and this school, because Adam Lanza's mother worked at the school. And in this situation, Ramos, his grandmother, worked at the school. So a police car being there might not make a difference if there's that kind of connection. But a study released indicated that in Texas, they've got $600 million to address school safety, right? And only 200 Texas school districts had a viable active shooter policy. That's 200, and I looked it up, out of 1,247. Why are they afraid of the topic?
I don't know. This is the third major school shooting that they've had in Texas. And when you go through and you look at all the measures that were in place in the Uvalde school system, they've done everything that these schools are supposed to do. They have security cameras. They have police presence. They had a school resource officer on campus who had a confrontation before he went in the door. And I think we still don't know exactly what happened there. But they also talk about the fact that they have perimeter fencing around the Robb Elementary School. Well, he climbed over the perimeter fencing and got right in. You know, it really does. It raises so many questions. I do think, you know, it's terrifying. But where there's a will, there's a way. And I've always felt that there should be like a retired police officer task force across the whole country. You know, you think about crossing guards and the security that they provide outside of schools, right? I would love to see a lot of police officers retire fairly young in life, and they have, you know, other options, security options after that. A school force that is full of these individuals who obviously get paid to walk the school, just be outside and walk around that school during the school hours and try to protect these places, because we need to we need to do more. This is not working. And this list of things that this school did not prevent this horrific, horrific massacre.
Right. Or even, you know, running around in some kind of a like little caddy around the school. Yeah. And then
they had that at Parkland, too. There was a school resource officer who was in a golf cart down mm-hmm. below who did not go into the school.
He chickened out.
Yeah. He was a wuss. He ran away as opposed to toward the shooting.
Well, that raises the question: how does it work?
Yeah,
does it work,
Jesse?
So my father ran a school in the suburbs, and after Sandy Hook, they had to come up with a security plan. And what they did was, first thing you have to do is secure the perimeter with fencing. And then you identify all the entry points. So there's about 3 entry points, and you have to have electronic gates. And then, as you said, they hired several former retired NYPD officers to just be on location at the property. And he made sure that the former NYPD officers, knew every parent and knew every student. That's right. So they could see who didn't belong and who did. And then you form a relationship with the local police department. You have an open communication there so you understand how fast they can get there. Also, there's lots of doors in these schools. So you have to have your eyes in every door. And then they installed surveillance cameras everywhere. And then they had a badge system as well. You don't come on the property and you don't have a badge, you don't belong on the property, so get the hell off the property. And he said that was very deliberative and it cost several $100,000.
Yep.
Now, not everybody has that type of resources, but I think with all the COVID money left over, as we talked about yesterday, there's plenty of money to go around. You also have to do, they don't call it that in an elementary school, but active shooter drills. You know, they call it something else and they say, all right, you lock the door, everybody kind of hide under the desk for a while until you hear the all clear. And that gives the kids, you know, a sense of routine when something like this happens. And then you got to have a counselor at the school.
Yeah.
You mentioned this kid had all the signs, cuts his face, wears all black, doesn't show up for the entire second semester. Warning flags everywhere. That individual has to say, hey, maybe call the parents. Or maybe say, this kid's not going where he needs to go. They need to intervene.
All right, Geraldo, there is just, Jesse, there is federal grant money where local schools can contract with police departments. They can get federal money for that, aside from the COVID money and the other. Is one entrance a solution, Geraldo?
I think that Greg and Martha are right, where there's a will, there's a way. Mm-hmm. And I think what is so offensive about Beto O'Rourke today, and to a different degree, with all due respect to the President of the United States, his railing against the gun lobby last night. No one is suggesting anything that really can guarantee total protection for our children. But we can suggest some concrete steps. Let me be, with all humility, I know that you know, some might think that that's a, anyway. Why not recognize the erratic nature of teenagers? We all went through it. And cop to the fact that Sandy Hook, Adam Lanza, was 20. Parkland, Nicholas Cruz, was 19. Salvatore Ramos, 18. The guy in Buffalo, 18. The guy in Santa Fe, Texas, 10 years ago, killed 10, 18. A juvenile assault weapons ban. I know it's not going to stop this totally. Maybe it's only 1%. A juvenile assault weapons ban. If you can't buy a beer, if you can't get a license to drive a semi until you're 21, how is it okay for you to be able to buy legally a weapon of war, an assault weapon, when you're 18?
Well, you can fight and die for your country at 18.
But you're monitored by corporals and sergeants and officers.
And there is a handgun. You can't get a handgun until you're 21, legally.
But they don't use handguns. These people only use handguns when they run out of ammo in the long run. And a juvenile assault weapons ban, do something. This could be Republicans and Democrats together, right, left, red, blue.
I think you're stripping a constitutional right away from law-abiding citizens because of some wacko.
I'm not going to debate,
but I think that's next, President Biden cracking down on the police during a massive crime surge.
President Biden announcing new police reforms during a violent crime wave. The president taking executive action today to commemorate the two-year anniversary of George Floyd's murder. The order will create a national registry for police misconduct and limit the transfer of military hardware to police departments. It will also require new use of force rules for the federal law enforcement that limits chokeholds while encouraging local police departments to make similar changes. So that is what the president was busy doing at the White House this afternoon. So what is the impact of those? And we worked on police reform. It failed on Capitol Hill, Janine. What did you think of what he had to say today?
Well, you know, this is something where he has the House, he has the Senate, he's got the Oval, and he decided to do an executive action. I thought that was pretty interesting. I don't have a problem with a national registry of cops fired for misconduct. I don't at all. But restricting the transfer of military gear to cops, I disagree with. I think that, you know, from what we've seen over the last few summers, there are some situations that actually call for that kind of hardware. But I think that, you know, at a time when crime is surging, at a time when criminals are being let out, and everybody wants to talk about guns, but if you're arrested with a gun, we're going to let you out of jail anyway. Don't worry about it. If you need to use it again, no problem. But everybody's going to be screaming guns in another couple of days. You know, he's just interested in cutting back on the cops, and it's just another slap at the cops. He wants to reform the police. You know what? Yesterday is a classic example of the Border Patrol agent. He was a TAC guy, and this agent goes and takes out the shooter. All right? Everybody is running toward the shooting, protecting the children. Thank God they were there. Okay, they responded within 2 or 3 minutes. And now let's make sure that we keep our knees on the cops now.
No. Jesse, no, I think it's another example of a time when President Biden seems to be sort of in a different moment than where the rest of the country is.
Yeah.
So you have to ask yourself politically, why did he make this decision to do this?
Well, he wanted to do it on the anniversary of the Floyd death. So, I mean, if this was a real urgent thing, he could have done it months ago. But he wanted to time it to the calendar. We have a crime problem in America, and he never talks about the criminals. Talks about the guns, talks about the police, but never talks about the criminals. That tells you a lot. He instigated these rioters in 2020 in the summer, and now he wants to strip out any sort of protection from the police, any hardware they had. That was the only thing keeping our streets together was some of this hardware. And that was after $2 billion worth of property damage. He wants to get rid of the no-knock warrants. Now, I can see both sides of that. On the one time, if you get bad intel from a undercover, you know, source, and then you go in hard and it's some grandmother, she has a heart attack, okay. But if you want to keep the element of surprise and you want to go in on a no-knock, that also can save police officers' lives because you don't want to knock, and then the next thing you know, you're getting sprayed with rounds because the guys know you're coming. And it's also, those things are pretty rare. You got to get a judge, right, to sign off on a no-knock. The chokehold. Obviously, Joe Biden's never wrestled in his life, because if you're trying to scrap with a guy on the ground and the only way to control him, let's say he's on angel dust and he's reaching for your weapon, is to get on his back and then go like this. Now, they use chokeholds all the time and people don't die. They use them in MMA. As long as you're trained properly, it should be fine. Now, the database, I agree. If someone's fired for misconduct, oh, that's fine. But I just don't trust the feds to not abuse the list. If other police departments want to see who's bad, who's good, that's fine. But I don't trust the feds to look at it.
So, Craig, Tim Scott tried to pass police reform, and he had some bipartisan support for that. And now all I'm hearing when I watch the response to this in other places is, you know, Republicans squashed this whole thing. But Tim Scott was extremely passionate about this, and he tried so hard to get a little bit of agreement on both sides. And
it's,
didn't get it.
It's kind of ironic that Joe Biden relies on our failed memory, that we might not remember that happened, but we do remember it. He may not remember it, but we do. It's interesting what happened to this story in the past 2 years. When President Trump was president, it was almost like every 6 weeks there was a video. And there was just tumult and unrest. And then somehow this whole crisis just was solved in November 2020. Just went away. There was no more around-the-clock videos and videos. What we find out now, and the people that do the research on this, we're talking like 24 cases, a mixture of unarmed black and white men. And when you look at the context of stops, police stops, sometimes the percentages are higher among whites than blacks. The point is, there are enough of these things to examine them closely and see what went wrong. And each one is different, just like mass shootings. Each one is different. You look at it and you go, wait, the cops should have had the guy sitting down instead of standing. The guy was drunk in the car. Maybe they should have just let him sleep it off instead of get. There's a lot of things. But what's interesting to me right now is how all of this just went away. And that's why nobody trusts these guys, because everything is political. Whenever there's, you never let a crisis go to waste, you know? And right now, the police is what's keeping us from anarchy. Sixth Avenue is not a pretty place. There's a lot of bad stuff going on. And I say stuff when I really want to say something else.
So, Geraldo, what about that? What about the fact that we saw a weekly police brutality video through the entire Trump presidency, and now we never see them? Why is that?
Well, I think that the media
bias is clear. I don't think that that is really arguable, even. I think that Trump, everything Trump did was examined in the harshest possible light. That's not the situation with President Biden, with all due respect again. I think Jesse's right about what the president did with this executive order. Timing is everything in life. You know, you can't peg something like this to the calendar, even though you want to. If the calendar doesn't work for you, as it clearly does not in this particular topic, then you wait a week, wait a month, give some respect to the victims in this horrible, horrible thing that has happened. Now, Judge, I always agree with you, mostly. I think that with the National Registry of Police Misconduct, the problem is, I know so many cops, the problem is, what kind of misconduct are you talking about? You're talking about excessive force?
No. If you are fired for the misconduct.
But what if you're fired for insubordination?
You know what it takes to fire a cop, Geraldo? I was in law enforcement for 32 years. You know what it takes?
What if it's a union beef? What if it's a, you know, I've seen...
They sue when they get their job back,
Geraldo. There's a lot of pettiness. But I think that you can rigorously define police misconduct. I think it's possible. And I do think a cop should not be able to go get fired in a suburban district and then go work in some city.
Do they have it for teachers?
That's why you have a registry.
Do they have it for teachers?
I don't know, but they should.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'll never get another job.
There was a checking the box with this today, with this executive order, that progressives are demanding that this happen, that this police reform, and he's got to know that he has to show it. He's working very hard to hold on to that chunk of the vote as they head into midterms. So with that coming up, the FBI thwarting an ISIS plot to murder former President George W. Bush when we come back.
Remember ISIS? The FBI says it stopped the twisted plot by ISIS, the Islamic terror group, to assassinate former President George W. Bush. An Iraqi citizen living legally in Columbus, Ohio, is now charged in a sinister scheme, allegedly to murder the former commander-in-chief. The feds went so far, they say the man, I'll tell you what, the feds, how far they went. But this guy went so far as to shoot video of President Bush's home in Dallas, Texas, and was allegedly recruiting a team of assassins that he planned to smuggle across the southern border to carry out this attack against the former president. But, you know, Janine, the reliance on informants, when you examine this case, sounds alarming. Jesse said we should have led with this on any other day. The problem is, when you examine it, was there a plot or was there informants stroking this guy and encouraging this guy? Remember Governor Whitmer of Michigan?
Yeah, what's she got to do with it?
No, the four guys that were going to kill her.
We're
going to kidnap her.
Geraldo, every case is different. Let me tell you something. He wanted to bring in people via the southern border, people from Brazil, to help kill. He wanted to know if four people or six people was enough. And this guy, he filed for asylum in March of 2021. Here we are in May, almost June of 2022. The guy didn't belong here to begin with.
Oh, come on.
No, he didn't. He didn't belong
here. He's here legally.
He's here legally? No. Once your visa expires, you're not here legally.
He has already filed for asylum.
Okay. So it's our fault, and we should let him stay here.
It's not our fault. It's
the bottom line. This is not, I'm not going to say that this is no big deal. He wanted to kill a president of the United States.
I don't know if it's a big deal or not. All I know is that there were informants deeply involved, and I worry about Fed's reliance on
the first thing I thought was, this another Whitmer situation? Is this another Russia hoax situation? That's how low the FBI has gone down. And I think I speak for the entire country. I'm comfortable with saying that.
Yes.
That people don't trust the FBI, okay, because of what's happened over the last several years. But if it's true, okay, we'll go with it. What's the easiest way to get into the country? It's through the Mexican border, Geraldo. And I totally disagree with you. Janine is right. This guy, we let him into the country.
Way, not way through to the go. Mexican that border.
Doesn't matter, Geraldo. Okay, so he was vetted. We vetted this guy from Iraq. Oh, yeah, I want to come to America. Oh, yeah, I really want to kill W. Oh, great job, guys. And then he applies for asylum, and it's in process. Come on, Geraldo. We have to do a much smarter job of who we allow into this country.
I think that.
And I think Joe Biden should look at this
expression, smoke.
If there's any reason to build a wall after
smoke
this.
Smoke and mirrors. And to make this a border immigration issue,
Geraldo,
is exactly the rhetoric.
The assassins were coming across the border.
Counterproductive. Who thought of this idea? What proof is there of this idea?
I'm aside just from the saying fact that there are these the informants. Feds say. I don't know what I believe
FBI
either.
Informants, do you trust them, Martha?
Sometimes I don't. You know, I mean, I remember some of the setups, you know, when they came in with, like, briefcases full of money. You always have to ask yourself, would this person have done this plot if weren't put in this situation? But I don't know. I don't know how far along the plot was. And if that was the case, they were using their informants to get into WhatsApp, to get into all the technology, which is really a big problem for them right now in these investigations. So I think, if anything, it proves that they have an ability to get around those firewalls that are put there by technology companies and to break through some of these plots. So that made me a little bit more confident in the way that they're able to do these investigations.
Do you feel, Greg, more safe that ISIS is being monitored by the FBI or...
Is this guy really ISIS? Are you sure he's not an angry parent that just left a school board meeting? Because that's what the FBI has been looking at. Look, you know what's great about the media? How they describe him. They don't describe him as like an alleged terrorist. They describe him as an Ohio man.
A grocer.
No, an Ohio man. By the way, you know this guy, don't you, Geraldo?
That's right.
Yeah, this is why you're defending
him. I live in Cleveland, Columbus. What's 250 miles? Ahead, Dems playing the baby formula blame game as Congress tries to find out who dropped the bottle.
We are now learning just how royally the Biden administration screwed up on this baby formula shortage. The FDA commissioner telling Congress today that a mailroom error delayed the agency's response. Blame the mailroom to a whistleblower complaint at the Abbott factory. He was also unable to say when the crisis will be over, Martha. So impeachment.
The FDA has 18,000 employees and a $6.5 billion budget. It's an enormous agency that is obviously inefficient. If they can't get the mail to the person's desk, 34-page document that went to nowhere. And, I really do think somebody should be fired in this. There's never any accountability. It's like firing at a cop, Janine. You cannot fire anybody.
It goes to the top.
FDA agency.
But that's why they went to the mailroom. If they fire someone from the mailroom, it would be okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's why it's the mailroom's fault. It's stupid.
Yeah. Geraldo, impeachment. If this was Trump, impeachment proceedings would start immediately.
This is a dog ate my homework. That's the dog ate my homework.
Yeah.
What bothers me about the Biden administration response is the low energy and the fact that they did not think of imports in December. Have plane loads of baby formula from Switzerland here, Sweden here, immediately.
Instead of
waiting
3 months.
He's not a mind reader. Exactly.
Yeah, tastes like meatballs, though, their baby formula. Jesse.
Greg, they they requested the interview with the whistleblower in early December, but the whistleblower had a conflict with his schedule and couldn't do the interview until December 22nd. Greg, he works at a baby formula plant, and he didn't his schedule for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't do anything.
That's amazing.
It's like he's Madonna.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. This is
a little busy.
Something stinks here.
Not right.
You're not getting the whole story. One more thing is up next.
Boom. Time now for one more thing. This week, the final New York City payphone was removed. A bank of two phones was on 7th and 50th in Midtown, covered in graffiti. They were once over 6,000 payphones in the city, and they've all died because of the cell. According to the U.S. Federal Communications Commission, Greg's favorite commission, roughly 100,000 payphones remain in the United States, down from 2 million in 1999. How about that factoid? Tonight, Jesse Waters primetime, we have Mike Pompeo, Senator Rubio, and Senator Rand Paul. Greg Gutfeld.
All right, tonight we got the show back on 11 o'clock. Julie Banderas, Joe DeVito, Cat Tim, Tyrus, Dirtbag Debbie. It's going to be great. Do this. Greg's, what the heck is that? All right, take a look at this little animal. Martha, I hope you didn't look at my notes. Figure out what this is? A newborn baby at the Nashville Zoo. Take a look at this. Do any of you know what that is?
No.
Look at that. Look at those giant eyeballs.
Oh, I know.
What is it?
Hyena.
No. Hyenas are ugly. This is adorable. This is a nocturnal species, the second largest predator in Madagascar, known as the Phanalocus.
Oh, no one
would know. Phanalocus.
How would we know that?
You know what? Because I sent around a whole book on Phanalocus this morning, and you didn't read it.
You didn't send it to me.
Yes, I did. Why don't you blame the mailroom?
Yeah.
The dog ate my homework.
Judge, you're
okay,
up.
It's my turn. Okay, now, it's no secret that hugging or petting a dog can help relieve stress. And going to the dentist is one of the scariest things that you can do for some people. So a children's dental clinic in Ecuador decided to change all that with Aldo, the first dental assistant dog. He's a trained emotional support dog. He helps comfort children during their appointments so they can feel at ease with the dentist. Aldo should probably make his way to America, and a lot of children and big adult men that I know could use him.
I'd rather have the laughing gas. Geraldo.
My wonderful daughter, Simone, it's now official. She is a Yale Law School graduate.
Wow.
So bravo to her.
Congrats.
Yay,
wonderful, strong, smart, sharp, compassionate, loving daughter.
Where'd you get that from?
I am so, so proud. She's already got a clerkship in federal court and Eastern District. She's got a job on Wall Street.
That's fantastic. Congrats.
She's bought a condo in Brooklyn. It's
okay, Martha.
I'm so proud of her.
Erin Jackson won the gold medal in speed skating, and then she went up with the Thunderbirds for a great ride. It's their tradition to take up one of the gold medalists, and this was her turn. And
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Listen to The Five ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.